WHAM.
Good. Oh, we already did that. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
He is Steve Ray and Rob Linton. And
this mic is on.
At 20 minutes after the hour, it's sound bites.
No, you have to use that one.
Well, I was going to let Chris use this one.
But we don't have, we only have...
We're still discombobulated.
Yeah, we're still... Yeah.
We, yes. I'm leaving the house quarter after 10, so I get here nice and early. My wife decides, oh, I'm going to go with you. She's not even dressed yet.
Yeah, right.
Then we had to take her car, which of course is out of gas.
Right.
God knows I love her, but...
Yeah, right. It is Father's Day, so... Red Hat Linux has received a new level of security certification, one that should make the software more appealing to some government agencies. Last week, IBM Corporation was able to achieve EAL4 augmented with ALC_FLR.3 certification. And believe me, if you know about security certification, you know that's a good thing for Red Hat Linux, putting it on a par with Sun Microsystems Inc.'s trusted Solaris operating system, the highest level of security function that anybody has. They've delivered LSPP functionality in Red Hat Enterprise Linux 5, and they're certified at the EAL4 level of assurance. This rating is awarded by government-funded National Information Assurance Partners, Common Critical Evaluation and Validation Scheme for IT Security Programs. This is a group that evaluates the security of commercial technology products. That's really a kind of a big deal that they got this, because it proves... that open source software can be used for sensitive computing tasks. If anybody had any doubts that you could do this with open source operating systems, we have proved them wrong, the folks at Red Hat said. I think that's a very nice thing. And I did want to, tell us what's going on. We already talked about the Safari. Did you hear us in the car?
No, we were in the garage.
Oh, good.
Trying to get up the elevator.
And I didn't hear all the comments.
Yeah. Oh, good. All right.
Well, yeah, the Safari Beta 3 came out for Mac and Windows, and they released a security update for it really quick, and people are commending Apple for that. But then the other side, people are saying, well, how come it had holes in it already?
Well, and they only fixed three of them. Well, right. And they only fixed three of them, and it took them 3 days to fix just those three, and there are a bunch more. So we'll see.
Well, there was
it
also
is a beta, so
there was also the conspiracy theorist saying that they released the version on Monday, knowing the other version was coming, but they just wanted to show everyone how fast they could go, because it was already ready to go, but they decided to come out with a new version and then show everyone they updated it.
Right.
So depending on the different conspiracy theorists you listen to,
yeah, right, right. I don't know. We had, I was going to talk about updating my system. I run Linux on my laptop, and I was running Ubuntu 6.06 LTS long-term support. And it's great. There's nothing, you know, nothing bad there, but I really didn't want to be stuck on 6.06, because there's all cool things that are available for the newest version. So I went to upgrade yesterday. And I realized that you cannot upgrade two levels at once. Well, you can do it. It's just dangerous. So I had to upgrade 6.06 to 6.10 and then 6.10 to 7.04, which is the one I use now. It just took me.
Couldn't people, jump from one to the other?
You can. It's just, it's not recommended.
Okay.
We had a lot of people doing the same thing with commercial software. You know, they bought version 5 2 years ago, didn't buy version 6, and now they want to get the version 7 upgrade. You can only upgrade from 6. If you'd have bought 6, you could upgrade to 7. Now you got to buy the full version to get to 7.
Right. You can do it. You just, it's just not recommended. And so I thought, let me be safe since I have to use this tomorrow to do the upgrade. So I was doing the upgrades and doing the upgrades. And the problem is, this is not a fast machine. The downloads were fast. I have DSL. The downloads were very fast, but the actual installation was pretty slow. So it took a few hours. And I don't know if you can smell that, but in the middle of it, Elaine came over and she was cooking, and she sprinkled something on the bag. And I said, what is that? She said, garlic powder to make sure the demons are all gone.
No what? No vampires? No blood-sucking applications on this sucker.
Yeah, exactly. So this is now working a little better. One of the nice things is I was able to download the Opera browser, but it's having the same – I've had a problem with this since we got it, which is that when I run the chat room, it duplicates. Every time somebody sends something, it enters a thing, it repeats all the previous comments. So I see them over and over and over again. And I was hoping that updating to the latest version of Java and updating to the latest version of Opera would fix that, but it has not. And I don't know why. You're not seeing those duplicates, are you?
No.
See, maybe I'm only plugged in as the admin does. One thing that I had trouble with, I haven't logged into it today, but when you try to scroll back to see what someone had said,
oh, yeah,
it won't stay back because it automatically shows you the next
advanced.
You can change that in your control panel for – there's a user control panel. You get to change that. Yeah, see, our Chandra just installed something, and so it repeated what Detox said before that, our Chandra said before that, Detox said before that and that, and it keeps on going over and over and over again, and it's annoying.
Gotta fix it.
Yeah, I don't know what the problem is.
Open source. Fix it yourself, right?
Well, I will, but I don't know what the problem is yet.
You got to report it to somebody. Wait a minute, and they'll fix it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But so far I'm running, we were talking, one of the things we were talking about the browser is I just can't get excited. Browsers are browsers. Operating you know, it's the same thing with operating systems. Vista came out, and it's just a GUI. I've seen it all before. I've seen all the fancy cutesy stuff on Linux. I've seen it all on the Sun desktop. I've seen it all before. So, you know, and everybody's going, ooh, Vista, ooh, it's so new, it's so great, it's so wonderful.
Shiny.
No, you're
it's
just
shiny.
You're,
I don't care. It's,
you're paying
it
more,
before.
And it's going to cost you a heck of a lot more, not just only as we go into operating systems, but applications and everything else.
Well, what I was really excited by was all the stuff they took out.
Yeah.
Like the database-based file system. And all of those things and all the extra security models and all the stuff they took out. But that's
Apple just announced that, in fact, Sun accidentally leaked it. Apple's using the Sun Zettabyte file system in 10.5 Leopard.
Right.
Because they like Zettabyte. None of the other prefixes sounded cool.
Yeah.
See, the next couple after terabyte don't sound very nice. So maybe we'll skip those.
Petabyte, exabyte, they're okay.
Yeah. Nanabyte.
Nanabyte?
Otabyte?
Yadabyte?
Yadabyte, Otabyte, yep.
Yadabyte works for me. I like that one. I don't know what that's about, but Zettabyte is good.
Yep.
Well, but, you know, there are people who probably have disk sizes that big. Look, we're going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco. See, I missed saying it last week, so I got to say it again. Rob Linton and me, Nick Francesco. Glenn Lamberts is coming in. I was completely missing that the mighty Glenn Lamberts will be in.
He's in a very poetic mood today.
He is in a poetic mood.
I'm glad you got back to the mighty now.
Yes.
You were skipping that.
The mighty Glenn Lamberts is in to do the news, the weather, the sports, all the things you really listen to Wham for. And then his mellifluous tones will be wafting into your ears mere moments from now. He'll be whispering sweet nothings and sweet baseball scores into your ears in just a few minutes. We'll be back on the other side of that. It is 28 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe, and that's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 33 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Yes, we've been joined by the mighty Steve Ray. No, we've got the mighty Glenn Lamberts. We've got the late Steve Ray. And Chris Reich has also joined us. And Chris is a sound engineer kind of guy, or you just
kind of a jack of all trades, really. And I'm helping Steve out with doing the recording for the show today.
So we're going to, of course, they're late, so they missed the beginning.
We're trying some new hardware today, trying to offload some of the recording from the computer. You know, trying to run the camera and the recording and the web and this and that and the other thing was just taxing my 3.5-year-old computer now.
Right.
So it's nice the Wham cam is working, but the URL is broken, so you can't get to it from the website unless you already know the URL, which we pasted in the I think in the forums last week.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they're helping us too, offloading some of the work from our little computers.
So we're hoping that'll make it a little easier for Steve to get the recording. It does mean, however, since you can't pause it, that you're going to have to go back and edit out.
Well, I can pause it here. We're recording it twice on two different devices just to see what happens. I have the Griffin iTalk, which is a voice recorder for your iPod, It works with the second gen Nano and the fifth gen video iPod. And it has a microphone built into it, and it has a line in, and you can use it for recording voice memos. So it's really nice to carry your iPod around, record voice memos on it. So I've got that hooked up to the system here, recording straight into it. And then the next time you sync the iPod to your computer, it shows up as an audio file on your computer. It's cool. A really neat little device.
Yep.
And then Chris is using the iKey. Why don't you explain that?
Gemini, yes. It's really a one-trick pony. It's a one box, takes the audio in on one side from stereo line inputs, converts it to a digital stream. It can convert it to MP3 format if you like, all in stereo, of course, and then it records to anything that plugs into its USB port. I'm using a flash drive because it's small and convenient.
Nice. Nice. Like you said, it's a one-trick pony, but I'm a Linux guy, and I believe in lots of little tools that each do one thing well.
I'm with you.
Yeah, but we all remember the olden days when you were lugging around, you know, racks of audio equipment for, you know, mobile DJs or just trying to record a show, and now the little tiny box will do it.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, DJs now, for parties and stuff, can actually buy a two iPod system.
Yeah, the Newmark DJ Pod.
Right, so you can go from one to the other, fade from one to the other. Right. If you've got an insane amount of guts, you can let you can pass
if
around
you trust your
iPod,
audience.
Right? Pass your iPod around and let them pick the songs and put them in a list, and then you play that list.
And then getting back to recording, if you look at the Alesis webpage, you'll see a new device they have. It's a, I think it's an 8-channel mixer with an iPod dock right in it. You can record directly on your iPod from the mixer.
Nice stuff. The recording industry has blossomed. Some of it has, a lot of it has to do with the iPod, but even around it, like, for example, with this device, which doesn't have an iPod attached to it, it still is.
But it can.
It can, but I'm saying it doesn't normally, and that's, and so there's, you know, it's just the recording industry in general. I think the iPod has awakened people's interest in things.
Oh, you're so right.
And then the whole podcasting, you know, craze has caught on. Anyone can now make their own, essentially, a radio station, record it, upload it to the internet, and have, you know, 1,000 people listen to it. And that's a whole lot for, you know, just somebody chatting about donuts, maybe, you know.
Sure.
And, you know, some of the big
donut show. People would listen to
the donut
that.
Show. Yeah. Ooh, donuts.
Donut. All right. eBay has yanked millions of ads from Google. Auction giant eBay has stopped buying Google AdWords in apparent retaliation for a now-canceled event meant to build support among eBay sellers for Google Checkout, a sign of increasing tensions between the internet competitors. This is one of those things where it's like little kids throwing spitballs at each other at recess. eBay was having an event called eBay Live. It's an annual gathering of eBay sellers and devotees taking place in Boston. And for the first day of that, Google was going to have their own event and party at the same time, talking about how cool it was for eBay people to use Checkout, which is Google's online payment service, instead of PayPal, which is eBay's online payment service. So the eBay people got angry and pulled their funding, their advertising dollars from that, which was millions and millions and millions of dollars, like $12 million a quarter. So they were all angry about that, and then the Google folks canceled their event. But by that time, the damage was done. eBay's already pulled their money. So it's going to be just a couple of little kids throwing spitballs at each other at recess, and we'll see where that ends up being. I still use PayPal. I have not even played around with Google Checkout. I have a friend who swears by Google Checkout, so... either, I guess, is okay. I use PayPal for people who want to join AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Very good. See? He hasn't lost a step. Gone for a week, not feeling all that well. Spent every night at the jazz festival trolling for chicks, and he was having a good time out there. But he's still with us today. Let's go to the phones. Our first caller is Henry from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Henry. What's your question?
Yeah, it's been quite a few days for me. I've had a number of hardware and software crashes, and seem to have recovered now. But I still have a problem, which is when I click on Internet Explorer icon on the desktop, I don't normally use that. I do use Firefox, but for some things, you know, you have to use
IE.
Well, when I click the icon, instead of Explorer opening up, another icon, another shortcut icon is created. And if I click on that icon, yet another shortcut icon is created.
Are you, well, if you right-click on an icon, it will create a shortcut by default. Correct. So maybe your left and right mouse buttons have been swapped?
No, I'm pretty sure they're okay. I've used the right.
But does it, so does it open any particular application after all these clickings?
No. No, Internet Explorer is not open. Nothing is opened. Just the icon appears on the desktop. Shortcut number one, number two, number three, four.
Yes, it's thinking he's doing a right-click and create shortcut. But it's in the mouse controls, there's a way to swap your left and right mouse buttons, or maybe the mouse is physically sending a right-click, and the mouse itself is wearing out. Well, do you have another mouse to try?
No, but I mean, I've used it on other applications, and they work just fine.
It's just Internet Explorer.
Just IE. That's
now,
right.
What's changed? Let's go back. What's changed since this started happening?
Well, let's see. The name of the file that came up. What happened was I was getting at boot. When I tried to boot, I get a message saying Windows System 32. The C_1252.nls file was corrupted or missing. So I had to reinstall Windows again. And it was kind of a trick there because I had the disk, but for a while I couldn't find my key code.
Mm-hmm.
But after several days, and my wife finally found it for me. So got that in there. And everything is running now fine. For a while, though, I was having another problem, which was a zone alarm file, which I think is vsmon.exe, mm-hmm. was causing the cursor to flicker between cursor and hourglass, and the machine was running slow. Finally figured out a way to uninstall zone alarm, and so that's working okay now. And I reinstalled zone alarm. Now the last problem I have is this Internet Explorer icon problem.
I'm wondering.
Well, one, delete all the shortcuts and put the Internet Explorer icon itself back on the desktop, maybe?
Now, you back up to service?
Yeah, that should work.
But when you did this reinstall, did you also go back and do all the service packs and all that stuff?
No, it didn't prompt me for that. I was concerned about that.
Well, it won't until you load the one update that enables auto-prompting. You have to load them manually first, and then one of those manual updates is the auto update.
I see. Yeah.
You might want to check in first, get some of the updates.
Right.
Internet Explorer 7.0.
Well, maybe whatever subversion of IE6 he has requires a patch on XP that isn't loaded yet, so it won't open.
Well, that's why I'm wondering.
That happens. We see that a lot on the Mac. When you reinstall your OS, some programs won't work until you load all the patches.
But the thing that is, though, is if he already was at IE7, did a reinstall.
Actually. Now he's got 6 and 7, confused together.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I'll go to the Microsoft site and then get all the updates
and put 7 back on and see what happens. That's, I think, your best bet at this point. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, Nina Francesco, and you. It is 42 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 47 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Google and its allies may have lost key Capitol Hill votes on net neutrality laws last year, but now they're mounting a counterattack, a lobbying effort to extend similar rules to forthcoming wireless broadband networks. As part of a congressionally mandated switchover to digital television broadcasts, the federal government is preparing to auction off a generous chunk of the 700 megahertz broadband TV band by early next year. Wireless companies are eager to bid on it because its signals can travel farther and easily penetrate walls, qualities that lend themselves to widespread wireless broadband networks, which I personally love the idea of. The Federal Communications Commission will decide whether to impose so-called open access rules on winners of the upcoming auction of analog TV spectrum. This issue is reuniting old net neutrality allies with Google, liberal advocacy groups, and wireless technologists lobbying for such rules and telecommunication giants in the other camp. But a key question, which is set to be discussed at a Senate Commerce Committee hearing on Thursday morning, is whether open access rules, a close cousin of last year's legislative tussles over net neutrality, should be levied on at least some of the companies that win licenses through the auction. In charge of deciding that point is the Federal Communications Commission, which is still finalizing rules for the proceeding. Google has also been pressing the FCC to reserve a portion of that spectrum to be used primarily or exclusively for broadband communications. Final comments on that proposal were due on Wednesday. So We'll see what happens with the new band, whether it'll all be sold or some of it will be available for open access.
And currently, all analog television transmissions will cease on February 17th, 2009, to repurpose all those transmissions. So by then, you'll either have to have purchased a digital TV or a digital converter box.
Yeah, they're talking about the converter boxes, which are going to be anywhere from,
right.
I've heard, $65 to $85.
Well, most people, if you have digital cable, you already have a digital converter box connecting to your analog TV. But what's interesting is there's another ruling coming down. I think July 1st, the FCC is going to finally force cable providers to separate their encryption and their decoding. So right now, in order to get cable, digital cable internet, digital cable from Time Warner, you must rent Time Warner's box. You cannot use anyone else's box. And there's a system called Cable Card that allows you to put the encryption thing that you get from Time Warner into any box you want. Doesn't work very well, and no one's been in a big incentive to make it yet. So hopefully this ruling will help spur the competition so that you can buy anybody's box and then subscribe to the digital cable card from Time Warner, and then the same thing happens with satellite TV, which is also digitally encrypted. You can buy anybody's box and then buy the encryption code from your provider.
So what you're really saying is I shouldn't have put stock in that rabbit ear antenna company.
Yeah. Well, see, the whole thing is coming to it's a cycle now that, if anyone remembers, the good old days.
Shut up, you puppy.
When analog cable first came out, you had to buy the box from your cable company. And eventually all the TVs are now cable ready, so you don't need the box for analog cable, but you do need the box for digital cable. And now some of the higher end TVs have a slot for cable card that will allow you to subscribe to digital cable and use the Time Warner cable card without needing the Time Warner box, but it just doesn't work very well because the technology, the standards aren't that defined yet, and because no one hasn't had an incentive to make it happen. So hopefully the new FCC ruling will help that.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ted from Churchville, New York. Welcome, Chet. Ted, what's your question?
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I have, through Roadrunner, the Zone Alarm.
Right.
And Computer Associates puts that out. I'd ran their Zone Alarm checkup, and among other things, it came up with registry problems, roughly 30, and you know, some of the stuff like the security checkup passed, the rest of it failed, et cetera, et cetera. I know they're trying to sell me a $40 suite, but maybe this is a point in time where I need to take it in and have it looked at by an expert.
That would probably be your best bet at this point. I mean, if you're looking at problems that have shown up in the registry, I wouldn't fool around with them if I were you. My suggestion is take it to somebody like Dave or Steve who can actually get in there and figure out what's going on. That's probably your best bet. Got to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's Soundbites at 52 minutes after the hour on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 56 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. All right, kiddies, sit back. Go get your footy jammies on. Grab your teddy bears. Grab your mug of hot cocoa. Sit Indian style in a little arc around the chair, the rocking chair. And if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Oh, we're awake.
All right, what's up?
All right, let me say right up front, this is my views. No way reflects either one of you guys' opinions.
Uh-oh. Keep your hand on the dump button, Rob.
But you folks, I already got a couple emails today. No, I do not recommend Stinger if your antivirus software is up to date. It is a waste of time. Yes, I know that you can sit there and run it and all that. But again, if your antivirus, and this is the key, if your antivirus software is up to date, you do not have to run it. It is a waste of time. I do this for a living. So, yes, this is my opinion. And again, this is my opinion. I do this for a living. And I have found over the years that if your antivirus is up to snuff, you don't have to run it. Because all that the Stinger program does is if your antivirus software is not is the key, up to date, it will check for some of these 42 viruses. You know, it's not a complete scan. So when you do your scan and your definitions are up to date, it right, checks for those 42 that were in the original
sticker.
Well, now
here's where
and
I
then
have
that's
to
the
disagree.
Key thing. People don't know if their definitions are up to date or not. They may think they are. So you have to open your antivirus program, look at the definition date, and make sure it's today.
Right.
Or, and it's actually easier to just run Stinger. And the other thing is, whenever Stinger does get updated, the reason it got updated is because there's been something out in the wild.
Two major ones.
Right, that goes around virus programs. So at that point, running it is a good idea.
Well, but again, it's all just, you know, a matter of semantics. For me, it would be a big waste of time, you know, for running it on people's machines because I automatically, because they say, well, how can you recommend doing that? Well, this is the way, because I know every day, I literally just go in, whether it's Norton, McAfee, ABG, any of these virus programs, there's a way you can go in quickly and check your definitions. If you've got Norton right on that front page, it will tell you
your
definitions.
Yeah, but I'm the other way around. I'm a belt and suspenders kind of guy when it comes to this stuff. All
right, I do it for
we
a living,
are going to
so.
Take a quick break. We're going to close out here. When we come back, we've got Jay Noble, who's the president of SAS Points. He'll be talking about TimeTrack, their time and projects program, and that'll be kind of nifty. But in between that, of course, we have the mighty Glenn Lambert, so we'll be in giving you news, weather, sports, all the stuff you really listen to Wham for in his beautiful and mellifluous tones. This is an expert's professional, and he's here to give you all the things you really need. We'll be back on the other side. Yeah, later. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with his friend Chris Reich, who is massively getting our sound stuff working correctly. Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. We'll be back on the other side of that. Welcome back, everybody. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, you are listening to Soundbites. I am delighted to say that we have a very special guest on the line today. It's Mr. Jay Noble, who's the president of SAS Point. Now, SAS Point puts out a product called TimeTrack. It's an automated reporting process for capturing your time on various projects. You know how it is. You get to working on a project, and somebody wants to know how much time you've spent and what you've done and all the yada, yada, yada. Well, this will help keep track of that for you online. And Jay Noble is with us on the hotline. Welcome, Jay.
Thank you very much. Good to be here. How are you guys doing this morning?
We're doing great. How are you doing?
Just fine. You want to talk about making sure that you get the yada, yada, yada properly tracked? That's
well, that was my point. I was about to say, why don't you fill in the yada, yada for us?
No problem. Yeah, I've been in and around the consulting and project management business for several years, and one of the biggest banes of my existence was making sure that I could keep the various consultants that were on projects, making sure that they were doing what they were supposed to do when they were supposed to be doing it, and then being able to accurately grab that information and at the end of the day properly bill the customer for the various time to give my clients the visibility into what they're doing and how much they're getting paid to make sure that they're getting their money's worth. So up until this time, essentially you either had a Microsoft project or a lot of spreadsheets, put things together, and it tended to be a fairly cumbersome process, not too easy. You always had spreadsheets or project plans going all over the place, and they essentially became out of date about 5 minutes after you had filled them out.
Right, been there, done that.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So I've been through that a number of times. And one of the great things about coming over to SAS Point and being able to take a look and do some work with TimeTrack, and I also might add that this is what we run our business on. We're a professional services firm doing Salesforce.com implementations, and we run our business on the TimeTrack tool.
Nice.
So a couple of big advantages that you have in TimeTrack is the ability to get down to the very granular level of tracking individuals' time. So when my professional services team are out doing their implementations, I've got the ability to capture the individual hours of what they're doing, how much they're charging for it, being able to bracket it by client, by activity, whether it's billable or non-billable, whether it's functional or versus technical, which is not anything greater or of significant difference from a Microsoft project or an Excel. But the real advantage comes down to this is a tool that's available on demand, delivered essentially via a browser. So I don't have to worry about multiple versions of the truth. I can get a single data entry point in my professional services team, have that consolidated up with the entire team, have that consolidated up to my entire organization, and I can start to see things like profitability by client, billing by function. It gives me visibility into whether I'm going to need more technical resources, more functional resources, what's profitable, what's not profitable, all delivered on demand via a browser. So our corporate headquarters in Ireland can have an access to this, see what's going on. So that ends up being the real advantage of being able to get detailed information consolidated in a single view of the truth and then spread around through the organization to be able to people to see it, analyze it, take action on it.
Yeah, one of the problems I had back in, you know, several or 800 years ago, maybe when Hector was a pup, and I was doing project management, was getting data from my people. You know,
right.
I could put together a great project plan, but after a while, what you hope is that it's based on reality somewhere, which is how fast this individual person works. And when they are putting down time, you know, at the end of a week.
Yeah, Friday afternoon, quick, fill out the time cards. What did I do this week again? Oh, about this.
Exactly. I worked for a company where we all used to joke about how Friday afternoon was when we wrote our science fiction.
Exactly.
You know, but if you can do it now, you can do it at this moment when you're actually right there in front of it, then it's going to be more accurate, it's going to be more honest, and it's certainly going to be more up to date.
That's absolutely 100% correct. One of the things that, you know, before my life in professional services, I was in sales and marketing, and I liken this whole time tracking and project management to salespeople filling out their forecast and opportunity management. Right, it's one of those things that, again, end of the week, end of the month, I think I'm going to do this and all that type of stuff. So there's a business process that we try and instill in a discipline. So it's an easy-to-use tool, very intuitive, available all the time via a browser. And we tell our people daily, it's just 5 minutes. What did you do that day? It's a five-minute exercise to get all that information in, and then they don't have to worry about it again. Typically, you know, when you're doing things either via Microsoft Project or a spreadsheet, That stuff gets put together, and then invariably somebody wants to see it a little bit differently or some different hours, and people are having to fill out the same information two or three times. Interpretation gets a little bit different, and then you're fuzzy, and then you have no idea. Versus what we're doing in TimeTrack is every day you put your hours in, you put what you did, and then I can slice and dice that any particular way I want to see how things are being done, what's being
right.
done, where's time being spent.
Well, I can see this being even used for, say, by lawyers. You know how they're working on particular cases, and they might, you know, get interrupted and have to spend maybe 5-10 minutes on another particular case that they could quick go in and note that. So that when it comes to even billing,
but yeah, you're in our business, Dave. That's one of the hardest problems I have. Is I got 10 machines on the bench. I'll do 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there,
yeah.
10 minutes there, and then trying to add it all up in the end.
Right, and that's one of the areas you mentioned in the legal firm. We've got legal market. We've got quite a few potential clients right now, and a couple clients actually of attorneys being able to actually tie their phone system in. One of the great things about Salesforce and the application itself, you can use a voice over IP telephone system to come in, use the caller ID. From a lawyer's perspective, a client would call in, their caller ID would come in, they would know which client is calling in. The receptionist would be able to patch that call through to the attorney. That would actually be able to do a record search into Salesforce, open it up, and then use the TimeTrack application to start doing accurate billing and say, I spent this amount of time with this particular client, and then tie into their billing system to eliminate a lot of the hassle and inaccuracies in that type of billing and time capture.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, tell us what size business this works for.
Yeah, and that's also a great point. This, it can work for any size business, really, even to the, you know, two or three person a law firm, all the way up to the very big, you know, several hundreds of professional services people, because it's I mean, two things. One, it's just very simple and intuitive. The browser-based interface is natural. There's nothing complicated about it. If you can buy something on Amazon, literally, you can use this tool to enter information in. So there's that aspect of it. The other aspect of it is because it's powered by, run underneath, by the Salesforce.com infrastructure, it's this industrial strength database with this web-based user-friendly front end. It scales to virtually any size organization. So there's really not a kind of upper limit on what organizations can do. You don't have to worry about, well, I've now got, you know, 500 users. I'm going to have to add new servers, or I'm going to have to get new hardware infrastructure.
So those of us who want to check it out, we go to saaspoint.com. That's S-A-A-S point.com. We'll have that linked online to our show links. And you can even download a 14-day free trial. So it's painless to give it a shot.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Excellent, excellent. Any last things you'd like to say to us before we... I really want to thank you. This has been both very interesting and very informative. Is there any last thing you'd like to say?
Not at this point, other than just thanks for the opportunity. Check out the SaaSPoint website. We not only have the TimeTrack application, we also have a real estate application called Property CRM and a mobile field scheduling application that maybe at some future show we can talk a little bit more about how to eliminate the hassles of tracking your field service people.
So you can actually track people who are out in the field doing work that way.
Yeah, we end up being able to kind of take some of the underlying technology that we've got and have a dispatch person take the resources of the field people and take that resource and actually drag and drop it onto a calendar to put them in the time slot, and then that communicates via Salesforce Mobile to a BlackBerry device so your field people can instantly see where they need to go, when they need to do it, and fill out the information, have it communicate back to close the service cases. It's a very exciting application.
Cool. Very nice. And this property CRM?
Property CRM, good for both commercial and residential real estate offices, tracking the performance of their reps and doing some pretty interesting things with matching of client requirements versus property in the database.
So you guys are seriously taking... a lot of the new, what are they, I don't really want to call it Web 2.0 because that's kind of a nonsense term at this point, but you're doing all that stuff and pulling in, it looks like Google Maps and adding a whole bunch of other things to that. And then on the other side, there's using the portable data things like the BlackBerries or whatever to keep that running. So it looks like you've got all the pieces and parts put together here.
Absolutely. Trying to get technology out of the way so people can actually do what they need to do in a much more efficient and effective manner. So the technology kind of becomes almost invisible. It's just a natural part of doing your job.
So we can get some work done.
Yeah.
That's
it's all this hassle we have to go through. We can't get any work done.
Yeah, well, this is something that's bothered me for a long time. You know, I'm one of those guys who loves to play with the technology, but most people just need to use the tool.
Yeah.
They don't
want
to hit, you know, if you had to figure out which way to hold a screwdriver, you'd never use a screwdriver.
Right.
You know, but it's simple. You pick it up. Mm-hmm. It's pretty intuitively obvious. You grab it like this. You twist it like that. You know what it's used for. The same thing needs to be done for our software, and it looks like you're working on that here.
That is absolutely correct. It's a great analogy. One of the things that we always talk about when we put sales-oriented systems in is you never have to talk to a salesperson about why they needed a cell phone. It was intuitively obvious
right.
to them, right?
You had to talk to them about why you wouldn't buy them a cell phone. That's the only thing you had to talk to them about.
That became the much bigger challenge.
Right. I'm sorry. I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Oh, no problem. You say that ended up becoming the much bigger challenge of why you wouldn't get on one. So that's what we're trying to take, the same principle, and apply it to software to say, listen, here it is. You provide it, it's just intuitively obvious what to do with it and how to be more productive and get a competitive advantage.
All right. Thank you very much. We were speaking with Jay Noble, president of SaaSPoint at SaaSPoint.com. That's up on our links list. I want to thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm David Reich.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, it's Sound Bites. Before we get back to the phones, which we will in just a moment, I want to talk a little bit about what goes on our website, soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Every week we do a poll. Last week was about Computer Associates antivirus product, which, of course, is free with most broadband stuff that you sign up for a broadband account and you get free access to this software. 297 of you voted, making it number 170 on the all-time hit list. Thank you very much. The vast majority, 76% of you, said no. Very close together, Time Warner and Frontier, and 11 of you had no idea. This week's poll is about an interesting thing from the paper this week. Scientists working in the Kodak Labs have developed a digital filter that they claim can capture a crisp, clear image of a candlelit birthday party. Not that most people photograph birthday parties with the lights off. I do. But the filter does have a few more low-light uses. I mean, whenever somebody's getting ready to blow out the candles, yeah, you turn off the lights and you want to take a picture of the blowing out of the candle.
They have some neat rotating pictures on their website.
Yeah, they do. By doubling the sensitivity to light of the image sensor in every digital camera, it makes it possible to take clear pictures indoors or at night. Chris McNiff, general manager of the photography company's image sensor business, said that the new filter provides a 2 to 4 times improvement in light sensitivity. The new method provides special cells that are sensitive to all wavelengths of visible light and collect a larger amount of light striking the sensor. By changing camera software algorithms to this unique new pattern, it makes faster shutter speeds possible and reduces blurring when capturing a moving subject. Kodak expects to provide samples of the new technology to a variety of camera manufacturers the first quarter of 2008. So around 2009, we should see these things hit both our digital cameras and our cell phones.
They can do up to an 8,000 ISO, which is amazing.
Yeah, and the poll this week, of course, says, do you feel a need for Kodak's new low-light digital product? The choices are...
It's only $200. That's the amazing thing.
Yeah. The choices are absolutely, maybe depending on price, no, who cares, the Macintosh and the Linux. And so far, we have had 78 people voting, and 47% of you say maybe depends on the price. Now, you'll notice that after you have voted, you'll see below that a small yellow box. In that box, you can click on Give Us Your Opinion. That takes you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Thank you. And you can now enter an opinion where you get to say, where would you find Kodak's low-light technology most useful? And, of course, you have to keep it clean. No Paris Hilton jokes unless they're actually funny, and I'll be the judge of that.
Well, remember the mess Sony got into a couple of years ago? They came out with their night shot video camera, and it looked like it could take pictures through people's clothes because it had a thermal imager on it, and your underwear is hotter than your outerwear, so you get a nice clean shots of underwear.
Yeah, right.
Wait a minute.
This doesn't do anything like that.
She's still in jail.
Yes, she is, yes.
She's still, I lost track there. Yeah, so
the sheriff
actually did this, thing.
The sheriff and the judge are fighting over who has jurisdiction to let her go where.
Yeah.
And the sheriff is saying, well, the federal government said that we have to reduce crowding, so I let her go.
Yeah, right.
And the judge is saying, no, you can't do that.
You can't do that. I'm actually keeping track of all of this during the morning show. I'm the entertainment reporter for the morning show, 6:45 and 7:45 every morning, Monday through Friday. So we've been keeping track of that. I'm getting a little tired of it. I mean, of Paris Hilton all the time.
Well, yeah, I mean, hello, shut up, do your time. You didn't do the crime, you wouldn't have to do the time.
Right.
Well, she's having a nervous breakdown in jail.
Oh, so they wanted, so is everybody else.
Well, that's why they go to jail.
Well, they wanted to send her to the pay jail. Yeah, the California's got this new thing now where you can pay to have a better jail cell. It's almost like a hotel room.
Right.
If you have enough money.
That's hot.
Yeah.
That's hot.
Have you got the Hilton and Chains on the list there somewhere? This is what we start my Hilton report with in the mornings.
That's hot.
No, the Hilton and Chains. Do you have Hilton and Chains? Oh, you can't find it. That's all right. It's in there somewhere. Listen, we're going to get back to the phones. Our next caller is Pete from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Pete. What's your question? Pete, are you there?
I got a laptop computer.
Mm-hmm.
Running Windows XP.
Right.
All of a sudden, out of nowhere, my USB ports aren't reading my flash drives. And my printer prints, the first page of a document and then stops in mid-printing and won't print anything else. The other thing it will read will be my optical mouse on any of the USB ports.
On any of the USB ports, so no matter what port you plug a flash drive into, it doesn't work. No matter what port you plug the mouse into, it works.
Right. And it'll say it's an unknown device. If I pull up under my computer, it'll show that it's a mass storage device, but it doesn't read it, and I can't dump anything into it or read what's on it.
Does it work on other computers?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it does.
All right, yeah, you got XP, you've got all the updates on it? You're up to Service Pack 2?
I believe so. I actually reformatted the whole thing after this whole thing started. Reformatted the computer, and mm-hmm. I've been downloading updates.
And
how many updates?
And the other key thing is, though, now, did you get all the updates for the particular laptop? Did you also go to that manufacturer and get all the updated drivers for that laptop? Since you've reformatted it.
Yeah, they're saying there's no new drivers available.
Okay. So you've got that part done. Now you got to go and check with the Microsoft and see what service pack you're on. Because if you installed the original software, how old is the laptop?
18 months.
All right. Yeah, you should have had service pack 2, no guarantees. But I would double check. If you go into the control panel under system, you click on the system icon, it'll open up a window, and it'll tell you what service pack you're on. As long as you're on service pack 2, that's good. That's half the battle. The other thing I would do is also, using Internet Explorer, go up to the website and check for any additional updates.
What brand flash drive is it?
I got two of them. One's a Lexar. And
neither one works.
Some of them need drivers.
Yeah.
But you said these work in other machines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other ones are verbatim.
Did you guys suggest that they remove the USB controller and hub from the device manager?
You can't.
If you go into device manager and remove the USB controller and hub, first make sure all the USB devices are uninstalled, right? Are removed, from the system, physically removed. Then go into the device manager, remove the USB controller and hub, and reboot, and it should reinstall them. It may ask for your CD, but it should reinstall them with the proper drivers.
But the only thing that's confusing for me is he's saying...
Oh, don't tell me this is the only thing that's confusing for you.
A little bit, yeah. My head's a little fuzzy today. That the mouse is working. So that part of... He's saying the mouse, he can plug a mouse into anyone. That works fine. He plugs in a USB.
Right. So it sounds to me like the mass storage driver is corrupted.
The driver
but you can't
for that.
Just remove
right,
that.
The mass storage driver, not the USB.
If you remove the whole
driver.
Thing,
yeah.
It'll replace
right. nope.
that when he replaces the
yep.
thing.
Yep.
So
right.
let us suggest that you try that. Go
Good
into
point.
Your device manager, remove your USB controller and hub, reboot, let it find it again and install it. Wait until it's done.
Yeah, and don't plug anything in the USB ports until it reboots completely and finds all those
right,
devices.
Right, remove everything.
From each of the six or seven hubs and controllers, remove all those.
Remove everything from the machine.
Yeah, all the physical USB devices.
Hold on. You've got six or seven USB hubs plugged into your laptop?
No, that's what it says. It says my root hub, it says I have 8 ports.
Yes.
Actually have 4.
Yeah,
something's corrupted.
Yeah.
So remove that whole USB controller. It'll remove all the hubs at the same time. Make sure nothing is plugged physically
manager.
Into that machine at all.
Yeah.
And do that, and then let it reboot.
Then plug the...
And storage. Find all those things again. Give it a minute to install all... It may ask for the CD. Let it install all that stuff. Give it a minute to settle down. And then try plugging something and see what happens.
I've also just posted a link about problems with Service Pack 2 and flash drives and a suggestion there. And one of the other suggestions we found is to leave the device plugged in while you boot. Sometimes then it recognizes it.
Maybe, yeah. But I would try this first.
Yeah. Yep.
Thanks, Pete. Appreciate it. Our next caller is Gina from Farmington, New York. Welcome, Gina. What's your question?
Hi. My sister has a new baby, so she's been trying to get all these videos, and she has them all on a DVD, but she couldn't play it on the TV. So they're all .mov extensions. So she asked me if I would fix it, because I'm usually good at this kind of thing. And I've played with it for hours and days and weeks, and I don't know how to do it.
You need a DVD authoring program. What computer operating system are you running?
What's the newest one?
Mac or Windows?
Oh, Windows.
You need a DVD authoring program, typically something like Easy DVD Creator from Roxio or Nero DVD, something or other.
I have the Roxio, Easy Media Creator Suite 9.
Right, and you need to author a DVD video. The files you have are in QuickTime movie format, which only play on a computer.
Right.
And your DVD authoring program should convert them into an MPEG-2 that will play on a DVD player.
Right, so what you want to do is pull them off of that DVD onto your hard drive.
Right.
Yep.
Stick a new DVD in, run the Roxio software, and tell it I want all these files to be playable. Then you have to worry about whether you have DVD minus R or plus R or whatever the...
What, minus R?
The minus R is the most compatible.
Yeah. Right. Pretty much every DVD player on Earth will use minus R discs.
Okay.
So you have to make sure you bought minus R discs.
Right.
And then you should be able to author a DVD.
And then they'll just walk me through it. Because I played with it a little bit, but I couldn't.
Yeah, you'll burn them back to the new DVD.
Which will be in a video DVD format, not a data DVD format.
Right.
Right, make sure it's video DVD. And it should walk you through the steps of putting all the pieces and parts on and making them usable on the television.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck, Gina.
Thank you so much.
Call us back next week. Let us know how it worked.
I will.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. That's, you know, you would think it would be easy. I mean, it really is.
The wonderful thing about standards is there's so many of them to choose from.
Yeah, right.
We've seen so much of it in our lifetime right now.
Well, the other...
My point is, how hard is it to write a program that goes out and says, what kind of CD is, what kind of DVD is this? It's not a DVD minus R. And then a thing should pop up saying, you know, this may not be compatible. Start right there. Then you put a minus R in and it says, what do you want to do? Oh, I want to create a program that lets me view these videos on a television. Okay, where are the videos? Let me create a menu for you. You know that? I mean, to make it as simple as possible.
Well, there you go. There's a new product you can invent.
Well, that's all built into the Mac and the iLife suite. So
right.
Well, her initial problem might be is that some of the video cameras that a video camera that burns straight to a DVD, they're in their own proprietary format typically. And you have to either a setting called finalize the disk or make the disk compatible in order to play it on a television. If it burns onto like the 3-inch CD platters. Otherwise, it will only play on the camera.
Right.
So if she's using a video camera that burns right to DVD, there's somewhere in the camera a setting to make it play on a TV.
Right. And then every little 3.5-inch.
Right. The big danger there is the smaller CDs and the odd-sized CDs and DVDs, you cannot use in a slot-loading drive. You must have a tray-loading drive. Otherwise, you'll probably destroy the CD drive. So you have to have a tray-loading drive to run those smaller-sized discs.
I have a friend whose business card is a business card-shaped DVD.
Yeah. That's kind of neat, but it won't work on a slot-loading drive.
Right.
Especially now a lot of laptops.
I gave it to a friend of mine who has just a Mac, and my friend said, what am I supposed to do with this?
Yep.
Well, it's a coaster. It's a little coaster, maybe. That's all you can do with it.
Yeah. And the big confusion probably for the caller was that most of the media creation programs are expecting to see a DV file from your video camera.
Right.
Not typically an MOV file.
Right, so you're thinking she may have to translate. Well, Roxio should be able to do
that. Yeah, the media creator should do that. I'm trying to see in their spec sheets if it does QuickTime movie conversion. She may need to install QuickTime on her PC, and then she'll be able to play and watch those movies on the PC.
Right.
And that might be what it needs to be able to convert them back into an MPEG. Because, you know, of course, everything's different formats.
Right. That's, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Lindsay, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
David Enright. In chain.
There you are. Now you found it.
What was that?
Is that what you use every morning?
Yeah, play it again.
Okay, hang on. All right.
Hilton in changed.
And that's, you did, where that's you, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah, it is me.
With, nice. With a little bit of Richard Strauss behind you there.
Yeah. Ricard.
Ricard.
That's okay. It was Dan Cole did that, the Wizard of the Blade. He found the also Sprach Zarathustra music, and I came in and recorded it. And, 4 minutes later, he had this up on the board for Chet to use in the morning. Very funny stuff. Very funny stuff.
That's hot.
That is hot. We're back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm David Reich.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And in 44 minutes after the hour, it's
She's not, though.
She is so not. She is so utterly and completely.
Do you hear what
her
parents are doing? They're bidding. They're accepting bids for the catering party they're going to have when she gets released.
Yeah.
To see how big a party they can put together.
I got to say, 30 days away from those people has got to be good for anybody. But that's neither here nor there.
Well, I've seen some interesting interviews this week. Because the big, the backstory of all that is being rich and spoiled and getting away with whatever you want. But then they've been interviewing the Trump children. And how grounded and business savvy they are, and they're not nuts like a lot of the other rich kids.
It goes to parenting, which is what your big point has always been.
Yeah. Screwed up parents have screwed up kids. Done.
You know, and here we talk about all this stuff. And folks say, "Well, what the heck does that got to do with computers?" Well, nowadays, folks are instantly finding out information just by going to their computers. I mean, you want to check on something or you don't know the state of something, before that we'd have to wait till the next day or that evening news.
Right.
Now, instantly, you got a question or you want to know something, you can quick go over your computer, type it in, and bam, you got it.
Right
then and there. Like we were saying before, instant gratification.
Well, this has been a problem for radio and TV channels. How do they keep up, and what do they use to draw people to them when, in fact, 24/7 I can get whatever piece of information I want at the moment I want it? It's a very tough call.
Well, this is where we were saying before, when I first came, we got here, saying how Jericho, TV state program,
right,
is going to be put back on because they found out that through the internet, a lot of folks were delaying or seeing when they were going to watch the program, and they didn't. The Nielsen ratings didn't take that into account.
Now they're going to.
Well, there've always been concerns about since the VCR first came out. The Nielsen ratings only track live TV.
Not anymore.
Well, I watch one thing and record three others, and I'll watch the three others eventually.
And now they're going to track recordings as well. They're going to ask people about what they've recorded and et cetera, et cetera. And those will count as part of the rating. So we should see some shows go up significantly. Other shows will stay the same, and some will go down.
Well, like my wife there for a while, she got and she likes watching The Apprentice. And she got behind it a couple episodes. So she just went to the website, boom, pulled it up, and watched the two episodes that she missed right there on her computer. Got caught up.
Right.
And it's
right, and you can even get them online now without even having a DVR. A lot of shows now you can get right online.
Yep.
That requires that you have a fairly new machine and that it be up to date with
decent
all the latest
graphics.
Codecs and high-end graphics.
Yeah.
But it is certainly doable. As a matter of fact, one of the machines that I have at home, which is not quite capable of doing that stuff, I recently upgraded the graphics card on it, and that was the only thing that needed to be upgraded in it. And it now does all of that stuff, that it has higher-end graphics now. And we're finding that a lot of television and companies are doing that. Radios are companies are doing that. You can now get podcasts of a lot of the shows that are on Wham! And so you can, if you're not available to listen to them at the time that they're first being broadcast, you can download them and get them later. And that's a really nice thing.
It's a VCR for radio.
That's exactly right. Yeah. It's just time shifting. We've been podcasting since when? And millions and millions of downloads, literally. People all over the country. We're big in Denmark. I don't know why. Thank you for all the people in Denmark. I don't
overseas.
Think I know any Danish.
I know a number of guys that are stationed overseas love listening and downloading iPod.
Yep.
I'll get an email. It hasn't been updated, and when it was down there for a while, I was getting emails left and right.
Two consecutive problems took it down for a month.
Yeah, right.
And I mean, I was getting, the guys over stationed in Iraq. There was two of them over there. Said, "When's it going to be back?" I said, "We're working on it, really. We're trying to do the best we can as fast as we can." So there are a lot. Yeah, they just depend on it,
Yep.
A little bit we can do for them.
Now, I hate to say it, but the show may not be uploaded today because my family has plans for me.
Well, yes, and that's perfectly fair. It is, after all, Father's Day. Yep. So I hope
sometimes it takes me a day or two. Someone in the forum suggested, why don't you just upload the unedited version? Well, that's about a gig and a half.
Yeah, right.
You know, because I record uncompressed and do all the compression and edited later. So that'd
well,
take,
the other
how long
thing
would that
is,
take to upload?
Yeah, right, exactly. And here's the other thing, Steve. You need to manage expectations. People should know that right. This show will be
uploaded. I never should have started uploading it Sunday afternoon.
Right. tell them it will be uploaded by Tuesday.
Well, by next week.
By next week.
That's how we started out. You got Saturday show the following Saturday.
That's right. Yeah. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 49 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob
Chris
Linton.
And if I,
try that again.
And at 54 minutes after the hour. Now you're just going to play that the whole rest of the show, aren't you?
That is the new sound effect for the show.
AskNick.com.
That's hot.
Absolutely. At 54 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbite. Our next caller is Mike from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
I've got a dining room network here with two XP PCs, and the lady of the house has decided that she hates Windows enough that she wants to convert to Mac. She keeps asking me all sorts of questions, as if I know or care anything about Mac. So what I want to know is what
he can get away with saying that only on Father's Day.
What I want to know is the migration path from Windows over to Mac. I don't. Can you network a Mac with ordinary computers or? You know, can you get OpenOffice?
Oh, sure. The Macs had networking years before PC did. PCs have been catching up for 20 years.
Yeah. All right, enough propaganda to help him with his problem.
Are they compatible?
Sure, yeah. They're more than compatible. There are some automatic programs that will copy all your files over for you. Detto has a couple of them. Move to Mac that runs on the Mac, and they have another one called IntelliMover that runs on the PC and then pushes it to the Mac. Or you can copy everything manually through your network or through CD or flash drives, things like that. Apple has a few things on their Switch website. They have a website called Switch 101 that explaining how to move things over and some of the differences between Mac and Windows. And most of it is just terminology differences. They all do pretty much the same thing, but in Windows you go to the Start menu in the bottom left, and on the Mac you go to the Apple menu in the upper left. So it's very similar, but sometimes different enough. And I like Nick's analogy. It's like getting a new car. It still drives down the road, but the buttons are in a different place, and it'll take you a little bit to get used to it.
Right.
Are there any courses available that can teach women how to use the Mac?
strangely enough, we at Jesse Group have some free classes, and we also have paid training. On our website, mac-av.com, we have a list of our schedule. This coming Saturday, we're having a basic Mac 101 class, 11 o'clock at our office in Victor. And then there's also the Apple Users Group. They meet the second Wednesday of the month at not East High School now, which is closed for the summer. So let's see, June meeting was last week. The July meeting is our picnic.
Right.
That's at applecider.org as well.
Now, in terms of all of your documents, they can be moved over easily. Applications cannot.
I assumed we'd have to buy all new applications.
Right. And if you seem to have mentioned OpenOffice at one point.
Yeah.
There's a program called NeoOffice, which is OpenOffice specifically for the Mac OS X interface.
Okay.
And that's at neoOffice.org. And it works exactly the same way as OpenOffice, and it does all the same stuff that OpenOffice does. It's just got the front end of the Mac, so it looks like a Mac.
How about things like Firefox and Thunderbird?
They are both available for Apple's operating systems, and they work great. I have a Mac Mini, and I use NeoOffice and Firefox, and I have used Thunderbird, although I don't normally get to use that on my Linux box.
Now, the Safari and Mail program that come with the Mac are perfectly adequate and don't have the security holes that the IE and Windows and Outlook Express on Windows do. So a lot of people start with that, but if you're already used to Thunderbird and Firefox on the PC, it works just the same as it does on the Mac.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Will she be able to continue printing to the printer that's connected to my computer?
Sure.
If that's a network printer and it's any normal formatted printer.
Well, a network printer or a printer shared from a PC.
Right.
If it can be shared to other computers, it can be shared to any other computer, including a Mac.
Oh, that's good.
You just have to download the driver for it. And in many cases, if there's no specific driver for that printer, there are generic drivers or the GIMP drivers that work fine.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll bring her to the free training course at your place and see if she still wants a Mac after that.
Sure.
There you go.
You know, she won't. If it involves reading or thinking, she won't be interested, I can assure you.
Oh, then a Mac should be perfect. Oh, I'm sorry. I mean that. All right, we're done for another week. It was just so easy. I apologize. I should have resisted. I couldn't help it. We're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, our special guest, Chris Wright, our very special guest from SAS Point Software, Jay Noble. That was his last name. I couldn't remember the Noble part. And, of course, Rob Linton, back from a week of doing whatever he was doing for a week.
At the Rochester International Jazz Festival, people recognized me more and screamed my name like that more than they did from the other radio station I work at. I'll have you know.
I'm telling you, we are making you world famous just with that phrase.
Or infamous, one of the two.
One of the two, and sometimes there's so little difference between them. I'm Nick Francesco. It's 59 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.